May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
This is Attention Please, in which each week we will draw your attention to some of the enriching opportunities, events, people, services, and issues on offer on this amazing peninsula we call home. A few weeks ago, in one of my long rambles around town, I ran into my old friend Rick Brendan, whom I hadn't seen much in the years since he retired from his longtime job as the main metalworking guy at Port Townsend's Shipwrights Co-op. We stood out on the street in front of his house, catching up for about an hour, and it quickly became clear as he listed the many projects he's been working on that, although he might technically be retired, he hasn't slowed down. He had helped this friend build an iron fence and that friend with a metal shop building, and was playing a huge role in the expansion project that's going on at the Port Townsend Aero Museum. But one project in particular really caught my attention. He said he and his friend Les Schnick were helping a couple who lived in a beautiful spot on the shore of Oak Bay reconstruct a whale skeleton. And so it was thanks to Rick that one bright, late February afternoon, I found myself driving down a long dirt driveway off of Oak Bay Road to the stunning waterfront home of Stephanie Warwag and Mario Rivera. The house stands at the top of a sweeping lawn that slopes down to a bluff overlooking Oak Bay and the southern end of Marrowstone Island, with a distant view of the Cascades across an expanse of glistening water. Warwag and Rivera were expecting me and came out to greet me as I stepped from my car, warmly inviting me in. We sat at their dining table by a big picture window that takes full advantage of that view, and I launched right into my long list of questions.
I understand that you have in your possession the skeleton of a humpback whale.
Gray whale.
Oh, a gray whale.
Yes.
I was told wrong.
Who told you that?
I think it was Rick.
Okay.
But I might have just gotten it wrong. But I know that it's not usual for people to be able to come into the possession legally of a whale skeleton. So tell me the story of this whale and how it came into your possession.
Okay. So both my husband and I are volunteers of the Marine Science Center, the Marine Mammal Stranding Network. And in 2019, there was a large die-off of gray whales. So there were a lot of gray whale carcasses washing on shore and the whole West Coast area, actually. And so there was a gray whale that was floating in the shipping lanes first and then washed off by Olele Point on shore.
About 3 miles south of our beach here.
You know, so we went down with the Marine Science Center, several volunteers to see what's the situation with the whale. And they already asked Betsy from the Marine Science Center, you know, if they can move the whale. And then it was a question about where do we bring the whale to. Sometimes you can bring it like this, like the state park here on Marrowstone Island, but they didn't really want it to have the whale there. Sometimes you can sink it, but it's pretty costly. You need permits and to sink
it. A lot of rocks.
Yeah, exactly. I think it can be like $10,000 to sink a whale
between
like this.
$10,000 and $14,000 to tow the whale out.
And then sink it.
And sink it. Permits and the boats and whatever and whatnot.
Guys, that's it. So I have to put you guys out if that's going to go on like that. Okay?
So you say that there was a gray whale die-off. I mean, did they ever work out what was going on? I mean, why the gray whales?
Starvation. They had a big...
They think
it's starvation. And also the population of the gray whale had peaked that year. So
it was, I don't know, 27,000 gray whales. It was a really high number than before. So they think maybe they didn't get enough food in the Arctic when they eat there in the summer. Did they reach the population numbers? It could be also, could it be a cyclic thing? Because there was a big die-off in 1999 into 2000. They also had a large number of gray whales.
So what time of year was it? I mean, where were they in their migration cycles? Were they coming back up from breeding or were they...
Yeah, they were coming back up from breeding and going back north. So they usually eat in the summer up north. Then in the winter, they go down south to breed. And they actually don't eat a lot there. and then they're going back up north again to feed again to in feed, the Arctic. Yeah.
Right. I was actually down in Baja, California, where they breed a couple of years ago and, yeah, learned that they actually go months without right. eating.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they did necropsies in a lot of the stranded whales. And what they mostly found is that they were all very skinny. So the blubber was very thin. So they didn't find necessarily a disease except for being emaciated. And our whale had eelgrass in the stomach, and that's usually a sign of desperation eating. Sorry, so they yeah. just
desperation eating, yeah.
Because normally they're filter feeders, right?
Yeah.
So
but
they
from bottom from the ground. So.
So all right, let's talk about this particular whale. So it was what sex?
It was a adult male gray whale, about 40 feet long.
And his name is Gunther.
How did you find that out?
Well, we want to name the whale, and you know, G for gray whale. And first, I thought about George. I said, George is too common. So I thought then Gunther popped up in my mind. I said, hey, Gunther. So Gunther stuck.
I said Gunther, great, because it reminded me of Gunther, the guy in Friends who liked Rachel, who worked in the coffee shop. That's why.
All right, so I gather that you did not sink the whale. What did you do with the whale?
Well, from where it washed up a few miles down from us, we had other agencies there, SR3 and Cascadia Research, along with the Marine Mammals Training Network Science Center. They called a few places, couldn't find a place to take the whale. Nobody wanted it, and the people on the beach didn't want it. And Stephanie and I looked at each other and said, hey, we can just take it to our beach.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you wanted a rotting whale carcass on your beach. That must have smelled pretty strongly.
It wasn't
strongly.
Bad. It wasn't that bad. We put lime on it initially to help with the decomposition and also to control the smell. So it wasn't that bad. I mean, when you got up close to it, yes. But as far as here, like at the house, maybe once in a while, if depending on the winds.
The first 2 weeks, you did smell it every day, but not the whole day, and it depended the winds. But it wasn't bad when you went closer to it, because we were pretty far away from the beach. So when you went close to it, yes, it was pretty impressive smell.
Did it attract a lot of scavengers?
Surprisingly not. And I'm thinking it's because of the lime. A lot of eagles showed up overhead, but we didn't see any feeding on it. We also saw some small tracks next
coyote
to it, so
prints.
I'm thinking it could be coyotes. But for the most part, the eagles left it alone, and we didn't see any other scavengers feeding on it.
Yeah, no seagulls, no birds were
no
eating
seagulls,
from
no
it.
Birds,
it was
yeah.
mostly crabs, like in high tide. It was floating in the water, and maggots that took it apart.
Maggots.
Mm-hmm.
That's her thing, maggots.
So.
Oh, here's a picture.
This is just before we're doing the necropsy, and you can see it's a male.
Yes.
And it's a pretty good size.
Well, it's enormous.
It's enormous.
Yeah.
When you see these pictures.
Oh, and there are its guts spilled out all over the beach. So this is the necropsy going on, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And this is already like several days later or a week later.
And so they checked for pathogens and so on, I suppose, in the lab?
Yeah, they took biopsies from all the organs and samples, yeah.
And who did this work?
So it's SR3 and Cascadia Research are the two marine mammal organizations here, and both of them worked with Gunther.
I see.
And they were also the ones that were towing it from the original place to our beach.
And how long was it on your beach before it was a pile of bones?
So we did the necropsy beginning June 3rd, and by beginning October, we had all the bones in our yard.
It was quick. Surprisingly, it was quick.
Really, just a few months.
June, July, August, September, yeah. Four and a half months.
And then what? So now you've got a pile of bones.
Well, so first we had the whale, and we did the necropsy, and then we were thinking, what an opportunity, and it would be great to collect the bones and assemble them. So we applied for a permit in conjunction with the Marine Science Center, trying to assemble it, you know, with the volunteers from the Marine Science Center. The one thing that came in between was the pandemic. So we couldn't really work
with anybody,
with volunteers together, yeah, because of COVID.
Right, but you had probably started gearing up for the articulation before the pandemic, right?
We slowly brought the bones up. Whatever had come loose or was about to come loose, to keep it from washing away, we brought it up here in our yard and kept it through the winter.
In the garage.
In the garage and also outside. And spring, we started working on it, cleaning it up, going through it, accounting for the bones, and then subsequently painting it to preserve it.
Painting it with what?
With bone white paint. Acrylic paint.
Latex.
Really, is this a sort of standard part of... years ago, I did a story about the unveiling of hope.
Yes.
You know, like at the Marine Science Center. So I'm kind of imagining that some of the people who had articulated hope were involved in this project, no?
Actually, no, just because of the pandemic and the two friends that we had that were helping just wanted to work, you know, on their own schedule. So it's a really like a very small project, as a few people really involved in that. But so Lee Post help with Hope, the project Hope. Mm-hmm. And he wrote multiple latex how to articulate skeletons. So I actually had emailed him and he had talked to me about the paint to use latex paint because it will be outside. And so I got that from him.
So it's been, I forget even what year it was that they did Hope, but I guess Hope must have been treated the same way, painted with latex paint. And
usually you actually don't paint them, you bleach them. If you leave them out long enough in the sunshine, they bleach, and so most of them are not painted.
So you had never done anything like this before, either one of you. What is your background?
I'm a veterinarian, so since it's a mammal, is...
Familiar,
exactly.
And she's also done a couple of necropsies across the way in Maristone Island with an elfin seal and a sea lion that washed up there also.
And what's your background?
I'm a retired military and retired police officer.
So you mentioned Les and Rick. So why don't you tell me who they are and how they got involved?
So Les and Rick are friends of ours. We met pretty soon after we moved here. We met Les first, Les and his wife Libby, at the July 4th celebration at Fort Worden, because we went there, it must have been then, we moved 2016, must have been 2017, and we went there with our motorcycle, with a sidecar bike, and Les and Libby also have a motorcycle with a sidecar bike. So this is how we met, and since then we've became friends.
Les and Rick, they're very talented. They're both retired. They both used to build boats. And Les is a retired industrial designer.
An artist.
He's kind of renowned here in Port Townsend. Rick has worked with putting boats together. He used to work with bridges. So they both are talented as far as working with intricate things like what Guthrie needs done.
So we actually approached Les first, and then he was right away, oh, we should get Rick involved as well. And that's kind of how we came about.
And you felt comfortable working with, like, at least the two of them, like, through the pandemic? And
yeah, we had our own little bubble. We were like, our little bubble there.
So you started out, you painted the bones, and...
We cleaned them first. Even though they were fairly clean, they still had little pieces of dried skin or fiber on it. So with like a metal brush, I cleaned every single bone first.
How many hours of cleaning do you suppose?
We didn't keep track on the hours. We should have done that.
Lots of hours.
And then how do you start reassembling them?
Well, this is the anatomy that's very similar to ours, and then also the booklets, the manuals helped. But so first I laid it out in the yard just to see which vertebrae would come, you know, in what order.
Order, yeah. Make sure we had all the bones also for it. So yeah, we laid it out on a yard, make sure everything looked the way it's supposed to.
And then the same with the front flippers. I had taken a picture on the beach when there was still a lot of skin on it, but it helped then kind of assembling it afterwards.
I see.
And also looking at, doing research on whale bones. We saw several pictures in books and whatnot, just to see how people did theirs and the pattern. And
right. So, but I'm a sort of technically minded guy, and so I would like, how do you actually fasten, the bones back together? I mean, what are you?
Oh, this is where Les and Rick come in play. Right. We just kind of did the outlay, and then Les actually was the one that designed how we're going to put it up, so it's not a straight line. And Rick then helped with the metalwork, with the welding, and so they really came up with how to do it.
And we're going to go over and look at that in a little while.
Exactly.
That's very exciting to me. But you have parts of the whale here now, right? Absolutely. At your home.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We've got the skull, the vertebrae, and the front flippers, and the scapulas in the garage.
Can we go look at those?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's walk slowly over.
So how much longer do you think it's going to take to finish?
Maybe we'll be able to finish it this year, but we'll see. Yes, there's no time schedule, but we're working on the ribcage right now, and this is a pretty big project. But once this is done, then it'll be done real quick, because we only have the last vertebrae to string up.
Right.
Because everything else is done. The skull was a pretty big project, and the front flippers. Now it's the rib cage, and then.
So the skull took some reconstruction, or was it?
It came in one piece, but it had a lot of plates that were not connected. They were kind of floating a little bit at the ends. So to make it more stable, we used epoxy and screws to really solidify all the different plates. And also Rick and Les put the connectors on. It will be mounted on poles, so they had to put, like, you'll see, like, these metal poles in it, in the back of the skull, and so we actually can, stand it up. So, yeah. So, and we had some of these cages, because initially we collected the bones in them so the coyotes wouldn't come and drag the bones away.
Oh my gosh.
Because we were worried leaving them in the yard, and then right, they would just come and take the bones. So we got a couple dog kennels.
Did you actually lose some bones that way? Or before you decided to put them in cages, or?
No, but we lost a couple bones on the beach before we realized that the tide would maybe wash it away, like from the front flippers. We then put the front flippers in big nets because they have so many tiny bones.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
So we lost little digits, and we lost the very last backbone, like vertebrae.
Oh.
But it would have been like that big.
Too bad. So you're gonna try and cast one in resin or something?
No, we decided we're just gonna use the bones we have. We were thinking about, should we cast the bones we are missing? But we decided, no, we're not going to put any fake
ones. It's the very last one, though, so you won't have to leave a little gap in the...
And they're only about, like, this big.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
There's Gunther.
Wow, that's... that is an amazing skull. You know, it looks for all the world like a giant pterodactyl skull.
It looks like a bird, right?
It does, yeah. It's like, it got this long beak.
So, and what we're going to do, because a skeleton, you might not, it might not really look like a whale. And we're going to put the tail fin in an outlay, like with the little metal rods out there. So you have the tail, because there's no bones in there. It's only cartilage. So you just have the backbones end like that. So it could be anything. So we're going to put the tail in the back so people actually can see it's a whale.
Right. Where's it going to go when it's finished?
Here in the backyard.
Is that right?
Yeah. right out here.
Is the public going to be able to come here and visit it?
Well, not at this moment, not at this point. We're going to look to work with the Marine
Science Center
in Port Townsend and see what, you know, as far as bringing...
Have groups then come.
Have classes, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
school
yep.
kids. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's we've got it staked out where the tail starts and where the skull ends up. It'll be facing... towards the water.
So the Marine Science Center is moving.
Yes.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
The flagship.
So, but there's not consideration of, like, you know, making this part of its new, like...
I don't think it's big enough. The new building.
Yeah.
For a 40-foot skeleton.
Yeah. 42 foot.
It will 42 be like 42 foot. Feet long, yeah.
And I see the flippers over here.
So we should stand one up. But so you can see... So this is painted, and I did not paint it underneath because we also didn't degrease the bones, what you usually would do for a museum. Mm-hmm. So there's still a little bit of oil left in them. So I didn't paint the ventral surface, so it still could come out if it needed to come out. But then you also see, so this is the original bone.
Well, you did a good color match.
Bone white. I first had... a few samples of whites, and I painted the bones and was like, no, this is not it. And so I went back and asked them, and I read something on the internet about bone white, so I went back and asked them, do you guys have something like bone white? And the guy that was working there, yes, we do have that. They didn't have the little sample cartridges, but he remembered, and in the computer it was, and this is what it is, and I was like, that's perfect.
And we didn't realize there were so many shades of white out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you come back here, so Rick and
we spent a better part of an hour inspecting the collection of bones in the garage. Warwag showed me a spot where the tip of Gunther's nose had been broken and healed over with a rough mound of bone that looked like a crude plaster patch. I admired the artful way the flippers had been reconstructed, using some kind of silicone product to take the place of the missing cartilage. I was encouraged to heft one of the giant vertebrae, and found it surprisingly light. Too soon, though, it was time to leave, to keep an appointment Warwag had made for us to meet Rick Brendan and Les Schnick at Schnick's home shop just outside of Port Townsend, where the two were working on articulating Gunther's ribcage. It was a 20-minute drive, and Les and Rick were waiting for us in front of Schnick's big two-story shop building when we arrived.
Hello. Beware, hot recorder.
Uh-oh, is it on already?
It, you know...
He turns it secretly on, and you talk about
not secretly,
things.
Because I said it was on.
Yes.
Okay. No, hot mic.
Hot mic, yeah.
So hopefully you'll be editing it and clipping it and making it...
Oh, yeah.
Presentable.
Oh, yeah, because...
That's what I hope.
Hi, I'm Steve Evans.
Glad to meet you.
That's yeah. Les Schnick.
Yeah, that's I figured.
And you know Rick already. I
know
understand.
Rick.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Suspended from the rafters in a covered breezeway beside the shop building, I could see that Gunther's enormous rib cage was taking shape. We moved over to stand directly beneath it.
This has been. Go ahead. I was going to tell you about this structure a little bit.
Go ahead. Tell me. I was just going to say this is awesome.
Yes.
Well, it's been ongoing. At first, our first plan was just to hang them and be done with it. And then Rick and I discussed it and said, you know, I think we should back up and think about this, how we're going to do this, because how are we going to get it down there? And are we going to have to take it all apart to get it down there? And we decided, no, we don't want to do that. So what do we have to do to get it so it stays together? And we decided that we needed to hang all the ribs. And Steffi was pretty clear about that, too, because you don't know if you have them right until you have them all in terms of the shape and how they work together.
And just so our listeners know, we are in a sort of a breezeway next to Les's shop here, and the rib cage and spinal column are suspended from the rafters above, and then there is a framework down below that is, it looks to me, establishing like the distance between the bottoms of the ribs. And I'm kind of wondering, when this wood structure goes away, how that distance is going to be maintained.
Well, thank goodness it is going to go away, because it looks absolutely the tackiest thing you ever saw in your life, and certainly the tackiest thing I ever built in my life. But we needed to visually figure out, and looking at pictures like that one there, to see what other people have done, to sort of get a sense of how they flow together. Now, it changes depending on how you bent the pipe. Did the back bend this way where your rib cage is, or did it bend the other way? And we've seen it done both ways in pictures and stuff. And we just ended up with this shape, and the other pipes are standing up over there.
And the pipes he's referring to goes like, you know, right through all of the vertebrae, and it's a, what is that, 3-inch?
2 3/8.
Two-inch pipe.
That has been bent into a gentle arc.
Well, this structure, getting back to it, we decided to go back and take a different approach at it so that when it leaves here, it actually will leave here as one whole rib cage unit, you know, from number one to at least through number four. I don't know if we've decided for sure if we're going to add any of the next set on there or just end it there and say this is enough of a thing to carry and to move.
Which will be in a flatbed? Will you be able to rest it on
Last time we moved the skull down and the jaws and the vertebrae of the neck on that little trailer that's over there, our motorcycle trailer. And we're thinking maybe it'll be part of it here, but there's a guy who has a crane service in town. And we're thinking that between the two of us, we're going to get it down there. We might need him to help. Had his truck over there, you know, with his boom out here and pick up the load and move it out and maybe put it on the trailer or swing it on the back of his big truck. We don't know the answer to that yet, but anyway, this lower part will go away and we'll be keeping the upper part to keep the ribs together as much as needed, but there will be this metal strap that Rick talked about and it's seen in these pictures that we have. So that should be stabilized. Right now, all the eye screws that are up there are loose. We haven't epoxied them yet because it didn't take us long to figure out that.
I see. So these will not hinge and be able to
not
to
when we're done. Not when we're done. But right now they'll still move. What did I do my little sample? Hell, here it is.
Now, this is the kind of story where video has real advantages over radio, but you get the idea of the kind of planning, designing, and engineering that goes into a project like this. I ended up spending about 3 hours hanging out at Schnick's shop, where upstairs he showed me the huge, meticulous scale engineering drawings he had made and used to loft the beautifully curved main spinal support and other parts. Then we talked about art and other things, like evolution and the question of what living land animal is thought to be the closest relative of whales. We looked it up. It's the hippopotamus. Visiting with Stephanie Warwag, Mario Rivera, Les Schnick, Rick Brendan, and, of course, Gunther the Gray Whale. This is Steve Evans for Attention Please and KPTZ Community Radio News.
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
Mm-hmm.